The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. And a very happy bank holiday to you. Did you bring in the May? You know, that tradition of bringing in the summer on the 1st of May, where you go out to the garden and you bring in a flower, a bit of greenery. I hope you did. And hopefully we've a good summer weather-wise ahead, because we have had some stretch of rain and this week brought glorious sunshine, and that's what we want more of. A very busy program as always. Dominic Walsh will be along for our monthly In Focus Photography slot. Our theme was Let There Be Light, and in the next hour we'll hear another episode of Come West Along the Feel, and this was produced by I, and Connie Broderick took the lead on it. Fascinating documentary about that famous river, so stay tuned for that. But like I said, it is the first Saturday of the month, so it's time for a monthly Focus Photography slot with Dominic Walsh. Dominic, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, because I enjoyed the summer we had during the week. After 2 days we had, it was absolutely brilliant, and yeah, then it was gone as fast as it was here, it was gone. But yes, I'm doing very well. Look, aren't we out there and we're enjoying it? I know there's a bit of rain around like that, but we'll make the best of it.
Mm. Now, you are an outdoorsy man, because you have your yacht or whatever it is, your boat, and you have a motorbike, you have the drone, and you have your camera. So what would be the number one thing to do when you get a real good sunny day? If you had a choice, we know work comes in the middle of it, but if you had a choice, what would you do?
If I had a choice, oh my God, now that's a tricky question. What I would love to do, I would get up early in the morning, I'd go off with my drone and my camera. I'd like to take a couple of pictures early morning, because that's a good time to take pictures, early morning, late evening. And during the day, I'd either go for a walk, or I'd get my motorcycle, or I'd do a bit of gardening. But I'd have to be out, Joe. I'm that type of guy. If the weather's nice, I can sit inside. I have to be out and about. You know, and I go to my most favourite place in the world, out to Fianna, for a walk there during the day, and you meet people and you don't walk 10 or 15 feet without saluting somebody or ending up talking to somebody. So it's great to get out there.
Yeah, you mentioned three out of the four there. You left out the boat, but I suppose you could go around the lighthouse there in Fianna with the boat that evening if you wanted to, so you'd get it all done.
I could, Joe. I could. Come here, Joe. You seem to, people think by listening to you that I have a big fancy yacht like that, you know. I don't. I have a small little boat that goes out there like that, you know.
It's big enough, Dominic. you should start doing, we could do a program actually on the boat. That'd be a lovely thing to do, wouldn't it?
That'd be
Dominic's
really
favourite places.
We could, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And that, and you could bring a picnic and all, you could bring the sandwiches and everything, and we could sit down and have our bits and pieces.
Definitely, yeah. Jeez, that's an idea now, Dominic.
I would have every seagull within 20 miles coming down and take the sandwiches off us.
Yeah. We have to put that in the diary now, Dominic. That'd be a good idea. We'll do a programme from the boat.
And we have to go droning together as well.
Yes.
Joe. We were talking about that for a while.
I know, yeah.
We have to go and do that as
Well. Definitely. Dominic, we got a great reaction, and we'll be looking at them later on, to our theme, Let There Be Light. And I suppose we're lucky in that there is the great stretch in the evening, and we'd also a bit of good weather, so there was definitely light from all angles.
Oh, it was a great... It was the two days we had the sun there during the week. Like, it was absolutely fabulous like that. And to get out there and to see that light coming through. I've got hives in my garden up there. Somebody's putting hives into my garden there. And I was up looking at them from a distance, you know, on that. And my God, the way the bees were going during the 2 days of the fine weather, they were unbelievable. Hordes of them going in and out. It's absolutely fantastic to see them.
Are we going to have another Enterprise, Walsh's Wax or something, coming down the line?
watches, candles, or something like that.
Very good.
You never know, Joe.
Dominic always brings along some fantastic photos from his month. And the first one we're going to look at, and these are all on the website, as Dominic likes to remind me, because sometimes I forget, they're on the In Focus podcast section of the website. So the link is up on the Facebook page as well. So you can go there if you want to see the photos we're talking about. But we do our best to describe them accurately as well. Kerry O'Shea and Gerard Delanne at the game. And what is the game we're talking about, Dominic?
That's the Kerry v Clare game that was on there recently, like that, you know. I went up for the GA, they were launching their golf classic, so up I went. And as I was taking my pictures, I heard these voices from behind saying, "Hello, Dominic." And I turned around, I know these two people. I know Kerry O'Shea on the left. Well, I went to school with Kerry. So Kerry and myself were around the same age, like that. We were very young, just to let you know that. And then there's Gerard Delanne, who's originally from Tralee, living in Cork. And the two boys couldn't shut him up with the laughing and the jeering and the clapping and everything like that during the game. But it just shows that, like, when you're walking, I was just literally walking past, heard the voices, swung the camera around, and bang, took a picture like that, you know. It just shows that it's the moment. They're both laughing.
Yeah.
They're both smiling. And it just captures the moment. Thumbs up and everything like that, you know.
It's a great photo, Dominic. Like, it really captures the crack. You can see they're having the crack. And do you know what's wonderful as well? I don't know, did you do this, or was it just the way it happened? There's a few seats in front of them, empty, and a few around them. It's like the crowd has parted to see this light. And we were talking about let there be light. You can see the light radiating off these lads because they're having so much fun.
Well, see what it is. It was just that time, even when people come in and they're sitting down like that. That's why I'm saying it was a picture that I had to capture, because they had that space around them. And it just shows I was shooting either person on the right, either person on the left, and I shot in between them and just got the two guys inside there like that, you know. Maybe it's the fact that one of them is now living in Cork. You know, maybe the local people might not want to sit alongside a Cork person. You just would not know. I wouldn't hold it against them now being from Cork like that, you know. But it's just part of being ready at all, lifting up the camera, and there. As I say to people, if you spot something, take it fast and get it and just have a look at it, because when you come back, it could be gone.
Will they sit that close at the Munster final, I wonder?
Oh, that would be a risky one, though, wouldn't it? Yeah.
No, this next photo, we're talking about the great weather we had during the week. Well, I think this really captures it. Two-year-old Loa, is it Loa? L-O for the A, lovely name. Loa, yes. O'Callaghan enjoys an ice cream as the sun shines down on Kerry. The sun has made a welcome appearance just in time for the Wild Mind weekend in Fianna, bringing a bright and uplifting start to the festivities with clear skies and a gentle coastal breeze. The shift in weather has drawn people outdoors in droves along the seafront and across the village. Early arrivals are already making the most of the sunshine, strolling, relaxing and indulging in ice creams as the weekend gets underway. The timely burst of warmth has set the perfect tone for what promises to be a refreshing and energising few days by the sea. That's beautifully written. Did you write that, Dominic, or does someone write that for you?
Well, no, I wrote it.
Did you?
Myself. And what I do is when I write it, and I there's no qualms about it because I am dyslexic, but when I write it myself, I pop it into ChatGPT.
Oh, ChatGPT, yeah.
And I just get it and I work on that and it just kind of ties it up a bit.
Yeah,
but I give it the instruction and I tell it what to do. I don't just say produce a caption and that's what it is. I put in my bullet points into it.
Yeah.
The weather, the Wild Mind, the festival was on and like that. And the fact that the things, what happened was that day, I just got a call from the Examiner late in the evening. Dominic, we need a weather picture. And of course, then I rang Mike O'Neill outside in Fianna. I said, Mike, any chance that there's any nice weather outside? He says, there is, yeah. I said, can I go out to your calf and take a picture in front of your calf? He says, yes. Went out, walked into the calf. This young lady was inside with Breda King. I think it's Breda King is the grandmother and Laura O'Callaghan is the granddaughter on that. And I brought her out for a picture. But you can see it's an unusual picture because the young lady's eating her ice cream and that. And I tend to wait. I don't shoot it straight away because, like, the ice cream's over the mouth. from that, and it just gives a nice effect.
Yeah.
She's not looking at me, she's looking into the air.
That's what I really like, Dominic. She's looking off into the distance. Yeah, it's really good.
She's totally oblivious to the camera. She's no interest in the camera at all.
Yeah.
She's, her interest that time is nothing else other than that ice cream.
Yeah.
That's the thing what it is.
And Minnie Mouse is with her.
And Minnie Mouse there with Minnie Mouse is wearing her glasses.
Yeah.
And they're there. And it's just a nice bit of colour. Now, it's taken with an unusual lens. I don't go that close. My mom's telling people like that, you know, keep your distance and don't go into people's space. But what I did was I just wanted to give it that kind of, let's say, ambient panoramic-y wide look. So I had a 14-24 mil on the camera. So I pushed it all the way back to 14 mils and it's very wide and it goes through. And the thing about this is I'm down low and I'm taking it and I'm shooting up. I'm a fan of shooting low. Because when you shoot low, the subjects that you're photographing tend to look a lot bigger and they look a lot more vibrant in the picture than as well. So it just works again.
Yeah, it's excellent. I really like the fact that you've got down low as well because she's kind of above you. So it's brilliantly captured. Now, the third photo you've brought with you, Dominic, it's kind of, I suppose you'd call it a historical kind of an event. That's taking place in relation to this turtle that everyone was talking about over the last while. A long swim home. Kerry's 31-stone loggerhead Molly set for release into the wild after 22 years, bound for the Gulf of Mexico. After 22 years being cared for at the Kerry Aquarium, Dingle Ocean World, a 440-pound sea turtle is preparing to make the long journey back to the wild and eventually, it is hoped, to her birthplace on the Florida coastline. Molly and a smaller turtle was flown down to Portugal in a cargo plane before being released back into the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, wow. Like, Dominic, this is kind of special, I'd say, for you as well. You must get a great kick out of, you know, capturing something like this. And I'd say there was a bit of emotion there with Mr. Flannery and the rest of the gang.
I tell you, Kevin Flannery, yeah, Dr. Flannery outside there. This was unusual for me because Kevin rang me and said, Dominic, Molly's going home. I says, Molly doesn't go home at all. Molly is home. Because Molly was in that aquarium for 22 years. I got a call from Kevin 22 years ago to go take pictures of Molly when she was rescued.
Oh, wow.
And when she came in and she was feeble, she was injured. If you look at her front left hand.
Oh, yes.
Her left side there.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it
like her flipper?
Her fin? Is it her flipper?
Or, yeah, yeah.
You know, flipper there and that. Half it is gone. It was actually bitten off by a shark, I think, at the time. And that's why they kept her so long, because they thought that she just wouldn't be able to return to the sea.
Whoa.
But, like, she's obviously very healthy on that. She's well capable of swimming with half a flipper, or probably got it wrong like that. And she's going around there in semicircles. So what happened was these people came over from a zoo in Portugal that were going to take her, bring her over there, quarantine her for a while, make sure she was okay, and then they were going to set her free into the Portuguese Sea over there like that, you know. But you can see they're testing the water temperature, they're taking the stats of her there and that, they're monitoring her swimming abilities and things like that, you know. So, like, they're there, and the water that day, I can remember, because it was a cold morning, and the water was 23 degrees Celsius, and you could put your hands into the water, it was so warm, it was absolutely lovely. But, you know, like, when you think of it, I think the crew at the aquarium, they didn't show it, but you knew by the silence that they were grieving. No, they were happy, but they were actually grieving for Molly the turtle going away.
Yeah.
Molly was in with the sharks inside the shark aquarium, swimming around like that. But, like, she was about, I'd say, 5 foot in length, if not more.
Yeah.
And, like, huge, absolutely huge to see it like that. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I hope that she does make it to her destination. And I presume there'll be a tracker on her while there and all that.
That's what they're doing. They're going to put a satellite track on her.
Yeah.
And that satellite track is going to stay on her shell for almost 2 years so they can track every place she's going to go and on her trips.
Wow.
Like that. But they reckon she's going to go back to Florida. That's a fair bit of swimming.
Yeah, it is, yeah. She might be give you a call for you to bring your big boat to help her out on the final leg of it.
We're on about the boat again. I'm going to get something. It was horses with you one time when I was sliding about horses. I'll find something that Joe's doing now. Don't worry, you at home. I'll find something about Joe and I can hot ball back at him. You know,
Dominic, you know, you can hot ball at me. I never sent you on the photos from the birthday, Cullen's first birthday.
You were telling me, you asked me for all this advice and everything like that.
Yeah, so during the break, I'm going to send you a few photos there on WhatsApp and I'm going to see what you think about it. So stay with us. We're going to have more and we're going to be looking at your photos. Let there be light after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Dominic Walsh is with us for our monthly In Focus photography slot. And before we look at your photos, it's time to look at my photos, because I was getting tips off Dominic for our baby Cullen's first birthday party and how to take photos. And during the break, I sent him photos and we were laughing during the break, Dominic, because you were saying we shouldn't be saying to send photos on WhatsApp, but it was the quickest way I could get them to you while the break was on. And you said, oh wow, wow, and you were giving all these great kind of expressions, and I was like, oh, he's impressed with my photos. But you were more impressed with how big Cullen had got and the artistry of my photography.
The last time I seen this young man, he was in your arms, and I'd say he wasn't 11 inches long, do you know? Like, he's there sitting up by himself, like playing with his toys. He's absolutely... I must say to you at home, like, you know, like, no credit to Joe. He's like his mom. He is so like his mom. It is unbelievable. Joe, you have no say in that child.
No, like, but wait till he starts talking, Dominic. Wait till he starts talking. We can see then. We can make an overall judgment then.
George, you're going to get... when you go up to wake him up in the morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Colin here. Great selection. I tell you, you were listening. Fair play to you. You were listening and you took in a lot of what I said, if not, and you enhanced and you were thinking outside the box. So as I was saying to you at home, I was saying, you know, put them down, put the cake beside and take a picture of the cake and take a unique picture that you're going to save and put it into an album. Make up a little album, Joe, a little think box or something like that, you know. Mm. And every year, this photograph, you should take this roughly the same area if you can and the same setup every year. Don't do anything fancy or anything like that and just work with it. And you'll be very surprised in a number of years, they will become so important to show the age and how they're growing up like that, you know?
Yeah, and one tip I can give people, they probably do it anyway, but balloons, you know, there's always balloons at a party. Like, we floated a balloon above his head and the look of wonder in his face and he trying to reach it, and that's a great photo just to get. But make sure he doesn't catch it, because, oh my God, you'd be frightened out of your wits that he'd burst it and he'd get an awful fright, you know? But it makes for kind of, you know, a lovely photo. I did it with himself and his little cousin as well, and the both of them are kind of grabby it, and it's just a lovely photo.
But see, the thing is, it's all about taking their mind off you as the photographer. You're taking the pictures like that. So any, it could be a balloon, it could be a rattler, it could be keys I tend to use a lot of the time like that.
Yeah.
Just anything to take their mind off it. And the thing is, I noticed in a lot of your pictures, Joe, and you at home should understand this as well, Joe has almost gone down on the ground.
Yeah.
I'd say you're probably lying on the ground and you're down so low and you're shooting in. And if you're shooting, the rule is that your lens should always be level with the eye of the person you're shooting. And that's kind of it like that, you know, the centre of your lens. So that's how you go down kind of low to get the pictures. And you're down and you're shooting along. You've lovely backgrounds. He's got the Teddy family behind him. They've all got the little caps on them for the birthday parties and that, you know. So it's absolutely great. I have to say, if I had to critique anything, you know, you just took too many.
I mean, like, oh, Dominic, you only got a percentage of the bite.
Like all dads, that's my shoot. But yes, taking off. That's the only critique.
I was laughing about you saying getting down low. I did for a lot of them, but for that one's with the teddies. He has a giraffe teddy that's way taller than all the other teddies. So we had to put Cullen on the pool table and put the giraffe's head, because he was tall enough to reach the pool table, and he looked like then he was the same size as all the teddies. There's a lot of work went into that.
Okay, can I just say something? You're giving out to Dominic about his boat. And you tell me, you've space in your house for a pool table? Oh, no, Joe, now come on now.
It could double up as an oven and a fridge and a bed. And a bed. And, you know, it's great. It's one of those multi.
A pool table. I'm sorry.
Would it be worse if I said it was a pool? Like, that'd be in your house. You'd have a pool, I bet you. You'd have a pool room. An actual pool.
A pool. Yeah, I'd have a flood down the garden. That'd be only my pool on that. Great selected pictures. Lovely to have. And did you take these on a mobile phone or did you use a camera?
Yeah,
how did you take these?
I have an iPhone and I took them in portrait mode on the iPhone, which is pretty good, but you have to hold it steady because it kind of blurs everything else around it then.
You do. There's kind of a slower speed. And when you're using ambient light inside and the phone is working ambient light, it tends to slow down the speed to get that all that light in. A trick is, like, you know, is taking a breath, leave half that breath out and hold your breath and brace your hands and then take a picture like that, you know. But it's good to know. Like, and I think you at home would like to know how he shot as well, his mobile phone and that. So
yeah.
I'd say his memory's gone, his phone.
I'm surprised, actually, yeah. Yeah, I must have good memory because I take so many photos. But then I reckon maybe they're going up to the cloud and maybe it's not on the phone that it's being stored on. I must look into that.
As I say, do a little bit of a picture album for yourself. Keep it there. And it could be the cousins and everything like that. Because when the cousins come back in years to come as well, they'll be looking at how you and they were and that. And I presume you have a picture of Mom and Dad with Colin as well, I'd say. Have you?
Yeah, I've only a handful of myself because I'm always taking the photos. But yeah, we have them.
I'm the same in my house.
Yeah. It's time to turn our attention from our photos to your photos at home. And our theme was Let There Be Light. So our first one, Joe, I think this photo is very fitting for the theme of the month. I know it was Christmas, but I sent this to lots of people who loved it. I took it Christmas Day morning. The sunlight was shining through the stained glass window at the other side of the porch. As you can see from the light fitted overhead, I did not have it turned on. I really thought it showed the true message of Christmas and drew it to the attention of a few people who came into the church around that time. Thank you, Joe, for your lovely shows. Mary Landers. That is true. Stained glass, you know, it can be absolutely stunning. And it is all about light, isn't it?
It is on that. And there's a name for that type of light. It's called backlight. So it's light from a source behind what you're photographing, lights it up there on that. And to be honest, I'm so happy that Mary sent it in because it's absolutely lovely picture. And it shows that just even when you go into a church and you take your time and look around, because a lot of people would walk in wouldn't even notice this lovely stained glass there like that, you know. So it's absolutely brilliant. Just taking a bit of time and shooting like that. Probably just, you know, Mary, position yourself, come over a little bit and just check in your positions, because when you're looking through phones and things like that, it can be hard to get the angles right on that. So just walk around to the front of it and get your picture and kind of go on a bit, because you're shooting a little bit from the side. And again, that's me on horizons. I like straight lines in photographs, so it would just work out a lot better. But it's a brilliant picture.
Well done, Mary. It was God, according to the Bible, who said, "Let there be light." This was a sunset evening at Ballybunion, which can be a heavenly sight as rays of light beaming across the Shannon River and coming through a cavity in the ruins of the castle, which lies on the castle green. Yours, Moss Joe Brown. And moss were usually used to sing daily life photos from Moss Joe Brown. But Dominic, this one is an exceptional one of the castle in Ballybunion.
It is. It's exceptional like that, John. And I love Ballybunion. When I was a young man, I used to do lifeguard in Ballybunion, and we used to go up there and you'd see the sunsets in the evening like that coming down there. It's absolutely fabulous. It's a tricky shot to take. You've got to time it right, because like you've got to get your light coming in. You've got to go left, right, up or down. So you have to be a bit patient to get a picture like this, you know, and that. And the light is just shining through. It's the walkway when you come along to the castle in the Castle Green there outside in Ballybunion. You walk to out past it to see the sea outside. So it's that doorway where Moss has just positioned himself over. There's a little area where you can walk up and relax there and sit down, and you can see the light coming through and the rays coming through. It's absolutely fantastic. It's unusual for Master Brown to come up with a picture like this, but we love it. And the thing about it is, you should look at it. I like the horizon. I like the shape. I like the composition. It's absolutely lovely. Again, as I might say in some occasions, this is one for the wall.
One for the wall. Well, we'll take a break, Dominic, and we'll look at more of your photos at home after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Now, we're looking at your photos in our monthly Focus Photography slot with Dominic Walsh. And our next one comes from Jack McDonough in Glenbey. Hi, Joe. Attached is a picture I got last Wednesday of some swans on the River Lown taken from Killorglin Bridge for your show on Saturday. And thanks a million, Jack, and I hope you're keeping well. And it's one of those serendipitous shots with the two swans kind of saying hello to each other or kissing each other, and there's a heart-shaped formed. And as we know, swans mate for life. Nice one, Dominic.
Lovely. It is a lovely picture. And it's a lovely picture. There's another swan standing beside there. I know what it's like. I just said, like, trees a crowd.
Trees
the other
crowd.
One is kind of looking away and bashful. So I'd say the other one's like, move on.
This is, you know, ox, it's, yeah.
It's a great picture. It's a great picture. Down taking a picture of the swans there like that. Swans by themselves are very hard to take because they're so bright and they tend to always shine out. So what I tend to do is, if I'm using my own camera, I tend to underexpose a little bit, and then afterwards I will adjust the colours so I can get all the feathers in on that. What I might do there, Jack, if I was probably you, I'd come up a little bit from the bottom. This is what I call cropping. It's where you just change the shape of it. It'll make a lovely panoramic as opposed to an almost square, because like the two-thirds rule, as we say, is there to be broken, but there's just that too much water at the bottom. Great picture, I love it. It's a nice picture, but that's the only little tweak I would make to it.
Very good. Good morning, Joe and Dominic. What a great theme for this month's photo. And of course, the theme is Let There Be Light. It was Easter Saturday and the idea for my photo shoot was easy to mind. Light at the end of the tunnel. Here it is, a view from the middle tunnel on the South Kerry Greenway at Gleesk Kells. Wait until you and Dominic will cycle through it and I will make the tea. Best wishes to you both. Agnes O'Sullivan. We look forward to that day. Dominic, and it's a beautiful tunnel. And actually, I did with Connie Broderick a documentary on the West Limerick, the Greenway there, and you know, the Barna Tunnel, and we walked through that, and it's a similar kind of a tunnel. It was unbelievable craftsmanship what these people were able to do, and a lot of time to get through the tunnels they would use gelignite, they'd call it, or dynamite.
It's unbelievable. Like, and it's amazing. When we both looked at this picture, Agnes, I think Joe and myself, we looked at this yesterday and we go through the pictures. We both came up with light at the end of the tunnel. Like, it was just there on that. Well thought out. It is very good. And it's a brilliant picture to have, because when that's up and running and you've got the tarp macadam going through and it's all cleaned and all pointed to make sure it's all lovely and natural, when you look back at the original picture here to see it, it's a great picture. It's a great historical picture like that. But you're right, Joe. If we just look at the arch in this, and it's unbelievable, the stonework and the pointing and the craftsmanship that was there so many years ago like that. It is just absolutely unbelievable. And the structure is so strong, it's pure solid, like it's going to be there forever.
Yeah.
And what an asset it's going to be to South Kerry, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, when they built them, they were made to last. Hi, Joe, this is a photo of the Easter fire at the Dawn Mass in Anna Cemetery on Easter Sunday morning, just as dawn was breaking. Let there be light. Keep up the good work. Regards, Joan Trent. This is a great photo and really captures the theme, Dominic, with the blazing fire there at the graveyard.
It is, it is. And look, Joan, like, it's a difficult picture to get. Like, it's before dawn, like, it's dawn, but it's dark, you can tell. And, like Joan took the right idea, going over alongside the fire and shooting through the fire, because the fire was light, it was light in itself, and you would get the light from the fire back on the stone wall there like that. And you look at it, you can see the bags and all with a bit of charcoal in it and a couple of sticks in the bucket there to light it up there. The priest is there, has the light shining on the priest there on that. So it's a lovely picture on that. Probably like my last picture there, Joan, on that. The two-thirds rule again, come in there. There's an awful lot of black space up over the priest high. Just come down a small bit and turn it into maybe a panoramic, and it's a great picture like that, you know. Lovely to see.
Yeah. Hi, John Dominic. Attached photos for May, Clogher Church, Ballymac. Full moon and starlight from the church. Row of lights at government buildings. and sun shining through the ferns growing in Ballyseedy Wood reminded me of a group having a meeting. Regards, Siobhan O'Connor. And again, a lovely selection of photos. The one at the doll is really clever, the way the thinking about the use of light and let there be light. And you can imagine that plant there in the end, like there is a group of people around with their cloaks and they're having a meeting, like druids or something at dawn.
You could see it and the top of the leaves are bending down, so it's like, yes, just their heads are bowed down like that. So there's a lovely light coming in, and the light is coming from the left back, coming in across them and lighting them up. Absolutely lovely. The doll picture, It's a cracker. It is absolutely a cracker of a picture like that, you know. And that, what it is, it's a picture of the doll and the railings. It's in black and white. You can see the lights up there, the lanterns. There'd be more than lights, I'd say, like that. They're old type lanterns there. And the thing about it is, it's taken during the day. So as soon as you look at it, you imagine a nighttime scene straight away when you're looking at it. You're kind of brought into it. It tells that bigger story than actually what you're looking at during the day. Great picture. The angle is fantastic on that. And you've got your lovely straight lines in the background. It's great on that. Lovely set of pictures.
Hello, Joe and Dominic. I don't know if these are any good, but anyway, the first one is Waterville Car Park during the last storm. Next one is Derrynane Beach this morning. And the last, well, it's just that the silhouettes caught my eye. Regards, Stephen O'Shea. And the car park one, you'd almost think it was a beach that these cars were on. It's just the way the lighting is. And the last one that he's saying, it's just the silhouettes, is of these electricity poles that are carrying the electric wires. But it's quite a silhouette against that golden background. Is that the golden hour you talk about?
That would be the golden hour, yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. Again, I have to say, there are poles, they're sticking up their electricity poles. What do poles bring? They bring electricity to light up. So, like, you've got the light of the sunset, you've got the light going through the power of the poles, like that. It's a great, it's a unique, and it's taken outside the box. It's absolutely brilliant. And their silhouette, as you know, I find sunsets very hard to like. You know, they're so easy to get, you just point and shoot. But when you take a picture like this and introduce something into it, whether it be a pole or a tree or a person, it just adds life to a picture and it makes you thinking about it like that. The silhouettes of walking on the beach, that's lovely. Would you believe it, like yourself, Joe, when I looked at this picture, I thought the car park was the beach as well. Mm. I did. Like that. And there's no picture too bad. We'll take any picture in and we'll have a chat and we'll help people along to critique it, and not in a bad way like that. It was lovely to do it again on that. Lovely selection of pictures.
Good morning, Joe and Dominic. I hope you're enjoying the sunshine over the last few days. Have a great weekend. Regards, Aidan Griffin in Tralee. The photos attached are O'Sullivan Cascade, Tomy's Wood, Killarney. The second is of a dandelion close-up, and the third is the Belfry Chapel, Glenbey. And if you look close, this dog appeared at the side, wondering what I was doing. Lol. Enjoy, Aidan Griffin. And the Tomy's Wood is brilliant. Again, a dandelion is such a beautiful flower when it's taken that close up. And now I see the dog. I didn't see the dog initially, but that's a very photogenic church, that one in Glenbey. I often pass it, but it's like something out of Hogwarts or something, isn't it?
It's an amazing church. I think it's deconsecrated now. I think that church, I think they have civil ceremonies inside there, and that it's lovely. I was in there several times taking pictures. It's magnificent. See, the thing is, like, you stop, you look, and you see, like, and you see this amazing church. And again, it's just, it does look like you could shoot a film there like that, and could be any time like that, you know, on that. So, and the thing is, the light is coming in lovely. The dog, I spotted the dog straight away, all right, looking there. He was kind of looking down there at Aidan like that, on that. The dandelions, macro photography, it is absolutely lovely like that, you know. They're lovely to see and lovely to take. And they're very unique when you get that close. And that picture is an amazingly sharp image. It is really, really sharp, and there's loads of contrast in it. You get a great view in it like that, you know.
Excellent.
And that Tomy's waterfall, brilliant. Absolutely love as a picture.
Yeah, well done, Brendan. Now, Dominic, that's our photos, and what is our photo of the month? What have you gone for?
I've gone for something there that kind of caught my eye, and it just worked. Now, we get a great selection of pictures, and thanks for everybody sending in the pictures. If you've got questions, please send in the questions. as I say, if I can't answer them, I'll get somebody to answer them like that. But I have to say, it has to go to Ballyburn Castle with the light coming in. It's unique and it's nice and humble that everybody can get at and try this. And that's where I'm coming from when I pick out this picture. It's not that it's difficult, but everybody can go. It's Moss Joe Brown.
Very good.
You, Moss Joe.
Yeah, Moss Joe Brown, congratulations. You are our photo of the month. Our theme for next month, Dominic?
Well, it has to be summertime.
Summertime, and the living is easy.
I knew he'd go off. I knew he would start singing the song like that, you know. And his head is going, oh my God, I knew you said when I was going
so
to say it.
So summertime.
He'd be off for summertime.
Summertime.
You have to sing the whole song now at some stage for us, Joe.
Yeah, so I was trying to think. There's loads of summer songs that they'll have to. I'll have to take a think about it. So summertime, that is our theme. Summertime. Email them jmcgill@radiocarry.ie for Midday Wednesday before the first Saturday of the month. Dominic's going to stay with us because we're going to be looking into his archive, and he has a great selection this month.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Now, I love this part of our In Focus photography slot with Dominic Walsh, where we go into his archive. And very timely, Dominic has chosen this collage of photos. Prince Charles and his wife Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall, arrive in Kerry, of course, now King and Queen. On June 15, 2018, Prince Charles and Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall, visited County Kerry as part of a four-day Irish tour. They visited Derrynan Beach and House, Killarney and Tralee, focusing on environmental issues and local history. And a lot of people will be going, was that 2018? And doesn't time fly? It's amazing to think it was. And Dominic, we have something in common here because I was covering it for Radio Kerry. So I went down to Derrynan, and the security was so tight at this event. I left my house in Port Magee, had to come all the way up to Killarney to get security cleared, and then to go on a bus because you were only allowed bussing in. They did a ring around Derrynan House. Got the bus down, which was only a few miles from my house, to Derrynan, and then I had to go back to Killarney again to come back down home. I remember that very vividly. And you have a photo here. And I actually, then in Killarney, I covered it. Mary Mullins was covering it, I think, there. And everyone was flocking to that photo you have of Martin Ferris and Prince Charles. Everyone wanted to capture that one. But then on the beach, that was a lovely moment in Derrynan of Charles and Camilla walking. And it was actually my friend Lucy Hunt, who works with Sea Synergy. She was giving a marine awareness kind of a talk to them. And, you know, he's very much into the environment and all that. And then she said, no, you can go away. Because you won't get much of an opportunity, go for a walk on the beach. It was a bit awkward because everyone was looking at the two and they were going off on their romantic stroll, and then they just, I'd say they only went a few yards and they came back, but it was nice. But that's that photo.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's absolutely lovely. And the thing about it, Joe, I started at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And went out to the same hotel as you on that. And they call it becoming sterile, is what they call it, actually, is that when you go in, you're checked, you're vetted, and you're acknowledged as a member of the media and you're there. But you have to go in and then sit down. And what they do then is they give you a small little paper bag with two sandwiches inside in it. They give you a bottle of water as well. And they give you some crisps. And you have your crisps then as well.
A little goodie bag.
That, you know, so, and you go off for the day. It is a long day. Oh my God, it's a long day like that, you know. But it was absolutely an amazing day as well. Because like that, like how often would I, as a photographer, get this close to royalty like that and being able to converse with them on that? His wife, Camilla, was very chatty on that, but she is the boss. You know, I know he's the king, but she's the boss, you know, behind us all, Joe. Like, you know, they're all the bosses. In my house, my wife gives me the permission to say I'm the boss. So that's what happens in this house like that. But they were just lovely. And the thing about it is, like, he's smiling, he's jovial, he's meeting young kids, you know, and he's just... like, it was absolutely lovely. But you're right, getting back to that picture of Martin Ferris. Everybody wanted that picture. All the media, everybody pressed, like Martin Ferris, Sinn Féin and whatever, and his background, whatever like that, and to see him like they're shaking hands. And they actually conversed and they chatted and things like that, you know. It was a unique picture to get on that. And as you notice, there's young kids in this picture as well. And for those young kids that day, to shake hands with a man that was the future king, in years and years and years to come, the one memory they will have that will stick in their time is, I shook the hands, or I was alongside King Charles when he was prince that time. I met him in Tralee on that, you know. And like, again, I was in Tralee and I was in Killarney. And you spoke about Derrynane as well. You can see there that I have a picture from Derrynane.
Yep.
But I was not there.
Yes.
But yet I have a picture, and that picture is actually is categorized as my image.
Okay.
Now, it's called a pooled image. And what it is I was the photographer for Kerry County Council that day. So I was called a pooled photographer for Kerry County Council. So if, for example, Michelle Cooper Galvin, I think, was actually down in South Kerry, wasn't she?
I'm not sure yet.
And Valerie O'Sullivan was in Muckross House. And I did Tralee and Killarney. So when I was out there, when I was shooting, they would have access to my images. And I could send my image to them and they could use those images and vice versa. So that's how it's called pooling on that.
But so you would all be getting credit for the photos then?
Well, what it would be, it'd be Dominic Walsh pooled photograph.
Okay.
And it'd be a pooled photograph by Dominic Walsh.
And would Michelle Cooper Galvin, could she say the same?
She could say the same thing on that.
Yeah.
And then Michelle got my pictures down there and Michelle could work it like that. Basically, like you might say, oh, it's my image, but you can't be in two places at one time.
Yes. Yeah.
So you have to understand, this is how photography, this is how media works. You will also see magazines and big papers might cover an event in Dublin, you know, and they might say, right, the magazines might decide, Joe McGill is going to go in and photograph that tomorrow. Joe will photograph it and all his photos will be available to all the rest of the magazines. And then another magazine will go in next week and Joe McGill will get those pictures back out.
Yeah.
It's how it all operates and how it's efficiency.
Yeah, I'd loads more questions to ask you on it, but we're out of time because what I've noticed as well, like, and this was something on the day, media were kind of getting in each other's way because there was so much media. And it's amazing the way you don't have other photographers in the scene or you don't have other people, you know, that it's brilliantly captured from that perspective as well. Dominic, a pleasure as always. And a reminder of our theme for next month again.
Our theme is summertime.
Summertime.
Look, he's off again. Look, and that. Will you shut up a minute? Right, summertime, okay.
Yeah.
And it's get out there, take pictures of your friends, anything like that. Get out and chat. As I say, photography is a great way to converse with people. It's great to get out there, and like whether you're able, disabled, just get out, send us your pictures. We'd love to see them like that because loads of people can take pictures. It is a very easy thing to do.
Excellent. So you can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. Dominic, look after yourself and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thank you, Joe, and slán to your listeners.
Now we're going to take a break for the news at 10 and in the next hour we're going to have another episode of Come West Along the Field and much more, so stay tuned for that.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement. I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Later on we'll be talking about May Day Customs. Remember I mentioned that at the start of the programme, asking you, did you bring in the May? Well, we will be talking about a few of those customs and traditions, as well as hearing the fourth episode of Come West Along the Field. But first, Tom Lynch, birdwatch expert and native of Dingle, was on to talk about the Dawn Chorus, and also we asked him to tell us about the Puffin, because it was International Puffin's Day the week he was on. Lots of you had questions and we didn't get to some of them, so I just want to call them out now, and I got on to Tom in the meantime, so he's answered them for me. One was, hello Joe, will you ask Tom about the glossy ibis? This was taken a few last summer in Kinmare, and there was a photo drawn in at Garalt. And Tom says the glossy ibis numbers have increased a lot in the county, especially in recent years. There was a big influx last year and a few seem to remain. Normally a bird associated with Spain, but times they are a-changing, as he says himself. Someone else got in touch then to ask and to say, good morning, Joe. Lovely listening to Tom talk about the Dawn Chorus. Pierce Turner has a great song called This Is My Song for the Year, and Kate Bush's album Ariel has a lot of bird song in it. And that came in from Sean, the Goatman of Port McGee. And of course now of Misha Ivara, that wonderful collection of interviews. You can check that out on YouTube. And Tom got back and said, regarding songs and music associated with the Dawn Chorus, the list is endless. Blackbird Singing in the Dead of Night being just one example. That's Paul McCartney. Birdsong inspired singers, poets, songwriters. Some said their song was territorial warfare connected through music. The song being not a chorus but a time when each member of the orchestra plays randomly while tuning up their instrument. Others said the name chorus is incorrect as they do not sing in unison, but to those that listen with a cup of tea or coffee, or maybe I won't read what he's saying in brackets, in the early mornings of the coming weeks would argue that the word chorus is appropriate. And another query we had in then was in relation to Extractor fans, I think it was. Yeah, it is. Hi, I have a bird chorus nesting inside my Extractor fan in my kitchen over the hob. How they find it, how they found it, I'll never know. So Tom says, bird nesting in Extractor fans found a gap and the place quite enough to set up home there. A safe home from the bird's point of view. So that's how they found it. A few of my finches, blue heads, crimson breasts, died. Could it be the bad weather? Also, I have two goldfinches this year feeding. I used to have up to 15 other years. As we are we losing birds with all this rain? Also, how is the nesting doing with the bad weather? Thanks. And Tom says in relation to that, only two goldfinch coming to feeder when there were many could mean flock have moved on. Very interesting. Better feeding station nearby with nicer feeders, etc. So that's one of the reasons. Good morning, Joe and Tom. The swallows are back in my shed. I'm delighted. They are beautiful little birds. Great show. Well done to you, Joe and Tom. And that came in from Bridie. And thanks a million for that, Bridie. And someone else said that it was a brilliant program about the birds. Tom has some knowledge, really enjoyed it. And he definitely does have that. So there are the comments we didn't get to. And as always, when Tom comes on, he's very popular. So thanks, Tom, for getting back to everyone on that. And also, Tom wanted to tell you that he will be launching Gordon Darcy's wonderful new book called Bird Style, published by Dingle Publishing at the Fresco Room in the Dysart in Dingle this evening at 5 o'clock, featuring artwork, knowledge and scientific information on 112 of our best loved birds. One for the bookshelf of any nature lover, Gordon would be familiar to many from his previous publications, including The Breeding Burn, Ireland's Lost Birds and many more books since back in the late 70s. So looking forward to a nice crowd at that as part of Féilín na Bealtaine in Dingle, Fáil to Roimh Chaoch. So there, you can go along to that and imagine the brilliant information you'd be getting there with those two boys if they were chatting. So yeah, make sure to make that off. Now, like I said, later on we'll be talking about May traditions, but first it is time for episode 4 of Come West Along the Field. And this documentary follows the River Field from its source in the boglands of North Cork all the way to the Atlantic, exploring the landscapes, heritage and communities shaped along its course. And in this episode 4, we follow the field further downstream into Douai and on towards Listowel. Along the stretch, the river has shaped everything from settlement and farming to fishing and local life. But it's also a part of the field that's changing, with pressures on the river and the impact of recent flooding becoming more and more visible.
This documentary was produced by Connie Broderick and Joe McGill and is funded by Comisiún na Mban with the television licence fee.
The original village, which is not the village we're standing in now, actually grew up down Springmount, where the graveyard is now, and that's much nearer the River Field. And the Irish for Douai is Douai na Féile. So the field defines both the original village, the current village, and the parish itself. It is centred on the River Field.
Our journey along the middle section of the River Field continues, beginning this time in the village of Douai. Here I meet historian Mary McAuliffe, who reflects on how the river shaped the growth of the village and the lives of its people.
So Douai is here for, you know, 1,000 years or more. Monks came from Kildare to set up an abbey. This is why we're St. Bridget's Parish, around the 12th century. So there was already a village there, or a settlement there. and the remnant of that small little ecclesiastical building can still be seen in the old graveyard today. And that was the road from Abbeyfield to Listowel originally, down there in Springmount, closer to the river, really along the banks of the river. And it was only in the late 18th, early 19th century that the village actually moves up to the position that it's in now. I think it was the building of the church that we have today. Also the road was changed between Abbeyfield and Listowel, and this is the road we have now. And so with the church up here and the road going through here, it made more sense for the village to move up. And I think the feel was very important to people, certainly even when I was growing up. It was a great fishing river, and I remember people coming from all around the country to fish here, and they'd stay here. People would put them up locally. There's a lot of folk stories about salmon fishing. I remember one particular story about a local who liked the drink a bit, and he went fishing and he caught a salmon and he put it up in the hedge. And he went back to get another one because two is better than one. And we turned around, a pig had eaten his salmon. And when he told the story, he said, I'm paraphrasing here, that you're sure of your salmon once it's on the ground. But he said, you're never sure of your salmon until you have him drank. Because, of course, he couldn't sell the salmon for the drink. And there's lots of stories of fishing and going swimming in the River Feel. We used to always, as kids, walk over to the bridge in Kilmorna and play around the field there. And of course, that's where the railway station was when the railway ran from Limerick to Listowel and on to Tralee, and now where the Greenway goes past. So that connection between the passages on the river, the bridge at Kilmorna, and the railway station was very, very important to the village. And of course, the field floods, and so the floodplain going through Dubois would flood a lot of the farming, but it also leaves a very rich river mud behind, so it's both a blessing and a curse to the farming community along its banks. And I think for a country that prides itself on tourism and beauty, I think the fact that the Feel River Valley is a beautiful view, and we really should have a view spot somewhere between Dubois and Trinira to look over the Feel River Valley there, because it's quite lovely and it's quite spectacular. So the development of a viewpoint would be fantastic.
Beyond the village of Dubois stood Kilmorna House, a grand estate on the banks of the Feel, later reduced to ashes in the turmoil in 1921.
At that time, the occupant was Sir Arthur Vickers. And Sir Arthur Vickers had been the keeper of the Irish Crown Jewels, but got involved in a terrible scandal when the Irish Crown Jewels were stolen. They've never been found again. And it was suspected that his friend, Frank Shackleton, was probably the one who took the crown jewels. Howsoever, Arthur had to take the fall because it was his responsibility. So he retires to Kilmorna House with his wife. However, when the War of Independence breaks out, he's very friendly with the military and with the RIC in Listowel, and he would be socialising with them. And it was thought he might be giving information about the comings and goings of the local IRA. So one night they attacked Kilmorna House. Vickers was taken out and shot dead, and the house was set on fire. But it was a beautiful house, and all of the material possessions inside the house were burnt as well. Although there are rumours that there are some bits and pieces that made it into houses around the village before it actually burnt to the ground. And indeed, some of the rubble then was used in foundations and field drainage. And the only marker of it is a big tree in the middle of a field now. And so we lost into one of the great big houses of Ireland.
From here, the River Feel begins its steady journey into the lower section, flowing through flat, low-lying farmland before entering the Atlantic Ocean at the Cashin Estuary.
So my name is Catherine Hayes. I'm the Fisheries Inspector with Inland Fisheries Ireland. The lower section of the River Feel, it flows from Dubois down through Listowel, and it would flow through flat, low-lying farmland before entering the Atlantic Ocean, the Cashin Estuary. In the lower field, the river becomes broader, slower, and as we move into the estuary, it's influenced by tidal actions both in the Feel and the Cashin Estuaries. So maybe two of the defining features would be the tidal influence, which affects the salinity levels, and it influences fish migration, especially for our key species of salmon, sea trout, eels and lamprey. And then the second key feature might be the modified riverbanks that we have. So they've been modified and manipulated over time by the OPW's arterial drainage scheme, with flood relief being key to that.
Here in the lower section, the River Feel meets another tributary, the Smirla. Rising in the Stacks in Glenorudery Mountains, the Smirla runs for about 16 kilometres through fast, spatey water before joining the Feel at a confluence known locally as the Joinings.
My name is Derry Buckley. I'm the Secretary of North Kerry Anglers. Smirla is, in my opinion, probably the life of the Feel in a lot of ways. It's such a good nursery ground up there. It's a small, it's a tight river. A lot of it is overgrown. It goes all the way up into Lyre, up past the back of the sports complex there, and goes on for a good bit more than that. You can fly fish parts of it, but it's hard enough spin that. Traditionally, it's been wormed down through the years, but it's well covered over and keeps the water temperatures nice and even through the season, even during the height of the summer. So it's a great place as a nursery for the Feel. And it's a beautiful spot along there, a lot of wildlife there. Again, you see a lot of kingfishers along there in different sections of it. It's wild and overgrown enough now, but there's still access into parts of it to fish it along there. It's a beautiful, tranquil place. It's like the double waterfall there and things like that. It's a really nice place.
And the point that it joins the Field in, how would you describe that?
It's wide, it's open, and the Smirla comes into it nearly 90 degrees. When you see the water, you can visibly see when there's high water, the change in colour from the more acidic, we'll say, upland water of the Smirla coming into the Feel. It's always a great western pool for salmon. When they go up there, they decide to sit there, and they're going to a writer straight on. But yeah, it's wide open. It's a lovely place to fish there with a fly rod.
On the lower Feel in Cashin Estuary, Catherine Hayes explains the vital role of enforcement and monitoring, from cracking down on illegal nets to supporting the angling clubs.
One of our most important actions in protecting and supporting fish in the lower Feel is enforcement. So the lower Feel and its estuaries have historically been hotspots for illegal netting activity. We carry out targeted patrols, including night surveillance, boat patrols, drone patrols and foot patrols, and that's to detect illegal activity, which will be prosecuted through the courts. Every year we seize along the Cashin and Feel estuaries, we seize unattended illegal nets and fishing equipment. And then in relation to illegal angling practices, like taking too many fish because it's a catch and release river, we issue fixed charge penalty notices, and that's for the breaches of angling regulations. We also have a fish counter on the Feel, and that's part of IFI's National Fish Counter Programme. So the fish counter is at Skartley Dam, and that monitors the run of salmon throughout the year, giving us vital information on the health of the stocks. Then we use that to inform the status of the river, whether it's an open river, a closed river or a catch and release river. So I suppose we've got a lot of angling clubs on the river and that stretch of the river, and you know, we see a lot of the angling clubs as helping us to fulfil our role in IFI. Gives us, you know, more eyes and ears on the ground, and it strengthens our efforts in protection, and it improves enforcement outcomes, and you know, gives a good sense of well-being to the river. You know, there's a lot of sense of ownership for the angling clubs for the stretch of river as well. So angling clubs are very important along our stretch of river, especially in the lower Feel.
As Catherine highlights, the Feel depends on the work of its angling clubs, and one of those is the Tralee and District Angling Association. Just down from the Smirla Bridge, a large, well-surfaced car park, approximately 200 metres from the river, provides access to their waters. It's here I meet with Chairperson Neil Timlin.
Do you know all about the history of this place now, and what's happened here and everything?
Of this area here?
Yeah. You see, we're standing here now. If you go up to the very top of our fishery, which is called the Garden Pool, that's the land that we own, or the fishing that we own. And that was the garden of Kilmorna House, owned by... he was the keeper of the crown jewels anyway. That was his position, you see. This was burdened anyway during the Troubles, and he was shot. And his daughter then was over in France, and she owned the fishing rights, you see, from the garden pool right down to what they call the Joinings, which is where the Smirla enters the river. And the Tralee Club in those days, back in the 50s, I think they bought it. much to the annoyance, I say, of the stall anglers, or North Kerry anglers anyway. They felt they had been, upset, to say the least. So there was a deal done anyway, ultimately, where Tralee sold a portion of it from the Farnoge down to the Smirla, to the stall club, understandably. But there was a boycott on the bridge and the stall and everything, you know. Merchants from Tralee weren't allowed to cross. I suppose it was a kind of a protest or whatever you call it. But anyway, we're all in the best of terms now anyway, Listowel and Tralee, you know.
Can you tell me about the Tralee District Anglers Association, when it was founded and what stretch of the river it controls?
Well, to my knowledge, the club was in existence in the early 50s. We own some of the fishery and we rent some of it. We own about a mile of it and we rent another mile of it from IFI, which is the Inland Fisheries, and then the remainder we own from the, what they call the birches. They call it birches, they're not birch trees at all, but they call it the birches anyway. It's the far north, right up as far as the garden pool. We own all that, and we bought that from the Genis estate.
The association's waters include 14 named pools, among them Mahers, the Garden and the New Stream, long known for their salmon runs, though stocks today are much reduced.
What makes it a very attractive fishery is that even in low water, there is a good run of water, which makes it ideal for fly fishing. Any good fly fishing river has to have fast running water, and that's the secret of it. But as well as that, then, there are a couple of deep pools there on the river where you could do a bit of spinning. But most of the anglers are fishing a fly here now. Virtually from the hut at Mahers the whole way down to the Farnoge. Very, very good there, because there's nothing behind you to catch your fly, you know. As well as that, you can go out into the river like and with waders on you, and you can fish away there, you know. So in that sense, it's very good. There are some good pools. Again, you see, we, the members, that is, like, they go out and we cut back a lot of the over, where there's a lot of growth there. They cut it back so that it makes it easier to fly fish, you know, and that you cut the bushes and that type of thing, you know, and the members do that. We did a big job there, geez, it must be about 20 years ago, to try and improve the flow of the water by putting in very large rocks. Now, we did this in conjunction with the IFI, you know. They were actually funding it. We came up with the money, our element of it, and then they... But we did it in consultation with them, and it changed the contours of some of the river, you know. But the object was to try and create more pools so that the, you know, the fish are flying up the river and then they have to rest, you know. So you want to get them resting in pools if you can. And you maybe have a better chance of catching them then when they're fishing it. And a big, big job done. Now, the stall did the same thing around the same time, you know. There was money available, like, through some government scheme. When we all availed of it, I think, to try and help to improve the river. Mm-hmm. We have 68 full members and we have 6 juniors. We find it very, very difficult to get new members in. In our club now, we actually reduced our subscriptions, our annual subscriptions that the members pay, purposely to retain members, you know.
And along your stretch of the river, what kind of wildlife would you see?
Oh, well, you know what you'll see? You'll see otters, and they're beautiful, you know. You'll see cormorants, which the anglers don't like at all because they eat twice their weight in fish every day. Kingfishers, you'll see fowl, like, yeah, ducks and that type of thing, you know. You see plenty of wildlife, and crows, you hear them there. And up on, there's a place up there in the river called the Rookery.
Talk to me then about if I was to come down here and fish. Are we talking salmon? Are we talking trout?
You're talking mainly salmon, but there's a certain time of the year, like when the sea trout run. The river itself, like, is not as good as it used to be. Not by a long, long shot, you know, because the numbers have dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. Fishermen down on the Cashin are off the river too because, you know, there's no netting allowed. But it's a wonderful thrill to actually catch a fish, a big fish, a big salmon, like a 10 or 12 pound fish. And it's a great thrill.
And that's the first part of episode 4 of Come West Along the Feel. We'll have the second part after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
Now let's return to episode 4 of Come West Along the Feel.
As the Feel winds on, it passes into waters managed by the North Kerry Anglers Association. A stretch rich in fishing tradition, Derry Buckley is the secretary of the club, which oversees more than 15 kilometres of fishing on the Feel and Smeerla.
The club was founded in 1956 when a group of locals came together because the water was being sold by the local landlord, and they came together, and I think 82 members at that point in time put together the money to secure what we have now. There would be private fisheries along the river. It's quite complicated how it works out. So there are certain parts of the river are rated, certain parts of the river aren't rated. The land is owned, but that doesn't mean that the fishing right is owned by the person that owns the land. Some places then you have people that have the land, have the fishing rights, pay the rate on the fishing rights. It's all old English law, it gets very complicated very fast. We manage from Lower Lestore, we say, below the racecourse, down along that direction, up through the town, all the way up towards the pump house. And then we have another section of water then up around the Kilmorna area, going up there several miles of that then. Then we control a good bit of the Smeerla, a lot of the Smeerla River as well. There's really good fly water in a lot of it. Have a good mix of it going all the way through it. A lot of money was invested by the club down through the years. There was grinds put into it that was increasing the flow of the water to improve the fishing around the town area and things like that. But historically, it would be a very high catch area in its day. Like, fellas gave up their jobs to go fishing on the River Field. It was that prolific, we'll say, in the 60s, 70s and things like that. We'd be in around 150 members or so, which would be back a good bit from the heyday of it. In general, I think we have a fairly healthy enough club. In the latter years now, we've made a good effort to get younger members in. Outside members then, we'd have 33% of members, maybe a bit more. This year then, we put in an initiative as well where we're going on Fishpal. And Fishpal is a well-known site globally where you can book your day's fishing on the beats of the Lestore section of the Field. And you can do all that automated online now and get your fishing day, you know.
The pools on this part of the Field were long considered among the best places to fish for salmon and sea trout, as Derry explains.
Predominantly, it's going to be salmon, and it's always been also a prolific sea trout river. We get a run of salmon. Not a very big fish. We always had a good run of pail in it. That would be up to maybe the 5-6 pound mark. Then early season, you get multi-sea wintered fish that could be up to about 15-16 pounds, but still cast as a good fish on that river. Traditionally, you had a lot of the older members of the club and things would love to worm fish. Spinning, always. But in latter years, there's been a massive move to fly fishing. The Ginings, of course, would be known as a great spot. It's where the Smeerla meets the Field. It'll always be perfect salmon spot. It'll be perfect sea trout. Always great fishing there. You've down through the town, different heights of water, different pools on our sections fish better. Pump house fish is great when it's high water. It's a big wide stretch there. The water slows down a bit going down through it. And then of course you'd have what was always known traditionally as the back of Lofties, which would be crossing the race course. Of course that's dramatically changed now because it's all been rock armoured. But that would be, without being too boastful, I'd say it would have been probably one of the best sea trout pools anywhere in Europe, I'd say. Like, young fellas go down there bubble and fly fishing. They could catch as many trout as they wanted, like 19 and 20. Back in the day, wasn't it an unusual thing?
Lovely memories to have.
Oh, fantastic. I've been fishing since I was 6 or 7 years old, I'd say. Like a barn on the bank of the river. in the 80s. It was so good that time. I remember you could go down before school in the morning and catch two salmon, maybe sell your fish to Finbar McAuliffe above at lunchtime or something like that. Everywhere around me, you had families like the Gallivans. They were prolific fishermen along the river. There was a whole community of people there, a massive community of people around Listowel who fished. They all met in different huts around the river. Everybody had fish.
Echoing the concerns we've heard along the river, Derry reflects on the challenges now facing the field.
Always in the river field, when I was young, if you got a good run of water, you'd get 7 days fishing out of that before it to blank off. But then when farms started to drain everything, and every bit of land was drained, so what you see now is that the river rises very, very fast, very, very violently, and it goes down just as quick. So you'll see the silt in the river, it stays there for a period longer, as if you've 7 days for it to drop off, you've much more fishing. So again, like, that causes major concerns when the water comes out of the river, because to dilute anything that's going into it, you've less water in there per part of the thing. You walk along any part of the field, down by the big bridge there, you go down there, you're going to see Japanese knotweed growing 6 feet tall all the way up along it. There's a pile of Himalayan balsam along it. They're all invasive species that are there. Again, there's another problem then. It's the treatment plants all the way along. Up the river now and things like that, there's an awful lot of forestry up there now. A hell of a lot of it. And that's great. You're wondering what's that coming down. Anglers have generally been protectors of water and protectors of rivers and that kind of stuff. They keep an eye out. If something's wrong, they'll report it. They would have a better insight. I think most people just don't understand what's on their door. They don't understand it's their drinking water. It's everything else. Salmon, sea trout, they're indicator species. They show you the health of the system. And you're looking for your wildlife along it there. You want to be seeing your kingfishers, you want to see your otters. And it's just a lovely, calm place to be. It's here, it's our own river, it's our own waters. Our own kids can go down there and fish it. And that's a very important thing. It's not an elitist thing to salmon fish here, which is very rare anywhere in the world.
Jimmy Danahan, former Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. Well, we're here now on the bank of the River Feel. We're close to the big bridge, as they refer to it here, which was built in 1829 under supervision of Richard Griffith. So that bridge is an imposing structure. There are five arches there, so it is a great architectural achievement.
Standing by Listowel Bridge, Jimmy Danahan recalls the origins of the town and its close ties to the River Feel.
Ireland was totally forested back thousands of years ago, and people came into the island and they came by the rivers. So probably the people that came to Listowel first came up the River Feel and came probably through the Cashan. And there was a Celtic settlement here in Listowel, could be dated anytime 2000 BC. And that's where Listowel gets its name from, Listuhel, the fort of Tuhel. There are still visible signs of that fort near Gortanart House. The next we hear of Listowel is in the 13th century. It appeared in a census report that was carried out throughout the country. The Normans came to North Kerry then, and obviously they picked Listowel because of its location on the River Feel, that particular point on the north bank of the field. It was easy to be forded, and they picked that as a very important strategic location to build their castle. And that was really the beginning of Listowel, when the Normans, the Fitzmaurice family, decided to build their castle there. The castle that's there at the moment, that still exists, was built about 1420, and that may have replaced previous castle at that location, but it was again built for a strategic location on the River Feel.
That's the second part of episode 4 of Come West Along the Feel, and we'll have the third and final part after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
Now it's time to return to the final part of episode 4, Come West Along the Feel.
The River Feel had a huge influence on the development of the dairy industry. For example, in North Kerry, the marketplace in Listowel and the gatherings was very, I suppose, dependent on the dairy industry and the farming industry of North Kerry, which was very vibrant going back over 600 years. There's a poem actually in existence. It was a eulogy to the Fitzmaurice family. There's a line in the poem that says that cows couldn't move around North Kerry until they were milked, because they were so laden with milk. So there's been huge emphasis on the whole dairy industry in North Kerry going back hundreds of years. So the marketplace here in Listowel and the gatherings was very much based on cattle, on fowl, on pigs, and all the supports that would go with it, hay, turf and vegetables and so forth. So the River Feel was really paramount to all of that happening, because without the River Feel, the Listowel wouldn't be here, wouldn't be there.
Beyond industry, the Feel has shaped the cultural life of Listowel, a town renowned for sport, leisure and its rich literary heritage.
We are blessed in Listowel to have a number of walks. You have the Riverbank Walk, which we are sitting on here at the moment, and it's making a huge contribution to the health, and it has huge recreational value as well to the people of North Kerry. Kerry County Council did carry out a Blue Way study, but I think we're a long ways away from designating the river as a Blue Way. But in the meantime, I was chairperson of Kerry Sports Partnership. We were carrying out an initiative of Women Underwater. As a result of that particular initiative, we started a kayaking club here in Listowel, and now we have a very good functioning kayak club. So it's working very well and being very successful. So maybe in the future, the river could be developed for leisure sports, for tourists and so on.
My heart tonight is lonely for my fireland, so many miles.
Brian McMahon again wrote that beautiful song, My Silver River Feel, which is a classic. And again, Listowel people sing that all over the world whenever they get together. And John B wrote beautiful poetry based on the River Feel and his connection with the River Feel. And then you had other people like Seamus Wilmot. He wrote a book, and he referred in that book, The Splendid Pretence, to the River Feel. The first published writer of Listowel, D.C. Hennessy, wrote a number of poems, again, based on the River Feel. And, of course, the classic song was by Thomas Moore, who was regarded as our national poet when he was alive. It's called the Desmond Song, but the first line is "By the Fees waves benighted," and it was about one of the Fitzgeralds. It influenced him as well, and others no doubt, but certainly the River Feel has had a major influence on the whole kind of literary heritage of this town.
Above thy band, my River Feel.
Thank you.
The floods of November 2024 brought devastation to Listowel and the surrounding areas. For Jimmy, it underlines the need for long-term planning.
This was totally unprecedented since records started. Something like 70 houses here in the meadows and paddocks just close by here were flooded. People had to be evacuated. It has resulted in millions of euro worth of damage, and also further down the river at Killacrim, where there was extensive damage done there. DOPW have committed to providing, I suppose, banks in order to prevent future flooding, and that work is going to start immediately. But I think that we have to have probably a more futuristic plan, and we don't know what the future holds as regards climate change. But there was extensive drainage works carried out on the river, the field drainage, from 1951 to 59, and that alleviated a lot of flooding since then. Compared to what was there before that, the whole cash and drainage worked very well. But now I think that we have to just review it, and we have to prepare for the future. I know there's a pumping solution now being activated down in the Cashin area, but I think that the OPW will have to go to Europe really and maybe look at dredging down by the Cashin. The floor of the river now is nearly over the level of the land, and I don't think the pumping solution is the total solution. It will help, but I think there'll have to be dredging carried out there as well.
The field holds a special place in North Kerry and Listowel, remembered with fondness and respect and the memories of first fishing rods by the water.
There's that huge connection with the River Field and all the people in the catchment area around North Kerry, not just Listowel. Every day you see people, visitors to the place, sitting down in this chair where we're sitting now and looking at the field, because people have different memories of the field over their lifetime. It's very much part of the heartbeat of North Kerry. I remember when I was a young lad growing up back in Finnoog, the first thing I wanted was a pair of football boots and a fishing rod. And then you felt you had arrived when you got boat, you had it made. And the first fishing rod I got from a man called Johnny Beasley, who had a whole fishing tackle shop back in Killacrim near the river, was a split cane rod, and I was only 5 at the time. So I spent my youth on the river. And also the seasoned fisher people around here would know exactly where the fish are and where the pools are. I think it's very important to capture that knowledge as well. And there's still that great affinity with the river here in Listowel and North Kerry, and respect for it and love for it as well.
As the field flows through North Kerry, its story is one of memory, resilience and connection. A river that continues to shape the land and those who live beside it. In the final episode, we follow the River Field as it turns towards the Atlantic, its waters merging with the Cashin on its way to the sea.
Yeah, that is the final part of episode 4 from West Along the Field, and we will have the final episode for you next week, so stay tuned for that. We're going to take a break, and after that we'll be talking about May traditions.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
Now, lots of things happening over the May Bank Holiday weekend all throughout the county. Too many to mention, and there's lots of festivals kicking off as well for the summer season as well. But John G. O'Dwyer, who's no stranger to this programme, got in touch. A great author, and of course famous for writing about the Pilgrim Paths, and he has some great walking books, and he is a great columnist as well. And John got in touch to say he will be speaking and signing books at the Earth, Sky and Water Festival this weekend in Sneem, and he'll be there Sunday the 3rd of May at 11 o'clock at the Sneem Bookshop as well. So John will be there if you want to get your books signed, and also he's a font of knowledge about all the different walkways that we have throughout the county and throughout the country indeed. Now, yesterday I mentioned was the 1st of May, and that did you bring in the May, where you bring in a bit of greenery from the garden or flowers and to kind of welcome the summer in. And oftentimes, just speaking about the traditions around it, flowers placed above the doorway of a thatch cottage mark the arrival of May Day, reflecting a traditional custom believed to protect the home and welcome good fortune at the start of summer. The May bush was a decorated bush which in rural areas was left outside the house. In towns, it was erected in a communal place. Sometimes it was carried about the area by groups of adults, although later this custom was carried out by children. And the bush was often of hawthorn. The decoration usually consisted of ribbons, cloth streamers, and perhaps tinsel. Sometimes the leftover coloured eggshells painted for Easter Sunday were used as decorations. On occasion, candles were attached to it. You see that? Like, nothing ever went to waste back in the day, did it? Sometimes communal bushes were burnt on May Day evening. The bush was associated with the look of the house or the community, and in cities it was watched carefully in case of a rival group would attempt to steal it. The custom of erecting a May bush still survives as an individual household tradition, particularly, it says, in the Midlands, and this is according to museum.ie. Now, other traditions were the May poles were very popular in some large towns and possibly indicate a certain English influence. May flowers were picked on the evening before May Day, and this was often done by children who went garlanding for flowers. These were sometimes assembled together to make posies or crowns. Did you ever make a flower crown? Yellow flowers such as primroses, buttercups and marigolds were especially popular, possibly as they reflected the sun and summer. Furs and ferns were also put around the outside of the home. The flowers were placed on the doorsteps of houses and on windowsills. They were believed to offer luck to the house and offer protection from mystical forces. There was a strongly held belief that these were particularly active around the quarterly days. It was believed that the fairies could not enter the home as they could not pass such sweet-smelling flowers. They were often put on farm animals so as to protect them from being overlooked by people with the evil eye, who might, through envy, steal the productivity of the animals. Children often carried baskets of flowers and strewed them in front of their neighbours' homes as a gesture of goodwill and good luck. Sometimes mayflowers were placed in the local well so as to protect the water supply and the livelihood of those who used it. The stealing or skimming of water from the well or dew from the fields of a neighbour by those with evil intentions was believed to result in a lack of produce achieved by the household or the community. Water or fire was generally never asked for or taken from the home on May Eve or May Day so as to retain the look of the house. Mayflower water taken from the well on May Day was said to offer protection and cures. This water, a May morning dew, was believed to be good for the complexion. There you are now. You don't have to worry about, you know, different creams and lotions and Isle of Ulays. You can just go out and get a bit of the dew from the May morning and rub it on your face. Herbs gathered before sunshine on May Day were believed to have particularly effective curative properties. And the flowers were also used for crowning the May Queen. Tradition of selecting a Queen of May is found throughout Europe and may have associations with the ancient Roman goddess Flora. And then bonfires and dancing and the Marian processions are all part of this. And butter stealing and divining and forecasting. And remember, we had that great UCC folklorist Shane Lahan on to talk to us about this last year, the year before as well. It's just amazing, I think, the traditions that we have and that we had as well. And I think it's important to remember them because it's all part of where we came from. So that's all we have time for on the program this morning. I hope you enjoy the weekend. There's so much going on around the county. Get out and do something and get involved in something and go support these wonderful initiatives and festivals and events that are going on. And if you can't, just enjoy the long weekend. Thanks a million for tuning in. It always means a lot to me every Saturday morning here on the Saturday Supplement. I'll be back again next Saturday from 9 a.m. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Pat Kelly is on the way. Until next Saturday at 9 a.m, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry, because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.